Have you ever stopped to realize that many people feel that the song that ought to be used for the recessional for Baptist or Christian weddings is "The Fight Is On, O Christian Soldier"? Now, as I do this unit on the battle between the sexes, I want to begin with several introductory remarks. The first one of these is that I'm concerned about some loaded words. Words are vehicles of communication, and every time I use a word, I'm picturing in my mind a particular picture or thought. When you hear that word, you will receive a picture. Many times, the problem is, in communication, you have a picture and I have a picture. For instance, if I were to say, foot, what do you think of? Most of you probably think of a healthy human foot. Some of you may think of a club foot, as I had one counselee tell me one day. I'm thinking of 12 inches, a foot of measurement. You see, we're trying to convey thoughts, and so what I'm going to ask in this unit is that you try to listen to hear what I'm trying to convey rather than what you think I may have said or may be saying. I could maybe avoid some of the words, but in so doing, I would be avoiding the issues, and I'd have to find some other word that I could use in its place. So I have just chosen to go ahead and use the words, even though they may be loaded, and ask that you simply try to understand what I am trying to convey to you. I believe that God made male and female equal but different. One of the first times I ever did this series, a lady wanted to challenge me on everything I said by stating that there are no real differences between men and women. All the differences are just sociological. They're just taught. None of them are real. I wanted to say, ma'am, if you really believe that, strip. The God who made as many physical differences also made some emotional differences. Now, the Bible says we're different, but we are equal. At no point in the Bible does it ever imply that either male or female is superior to the other. I find myself concerned any time I hear a woman say, "Clyde, I'll show you I can do anything a man can do. I'll prove it to you." You know why? She's just said that she feels it is inferior to be a woman. Why? Because what she has said is, I have to measure myself by the standard of a male. If she really believed it was equal to be a woman, she would not have to compete with a man. She would be content to be herself, and that's all that matters. Well, as I say, I believe that God created us male, female, equal, though different. And we've got to tie into that if we're going to become healthy people and learn how to relate one to another. There's a reason for this. God made male and female different in order that we might come to the place that we complement one another. In Genesis, the second chapter, the Bible says when God looked down and saw man alone in the garden, he said, "It's not good." And so he proceeded to make for man a helpmate, is the way the King James translates it. That Hebrew word would probably best be translated complement, from the idea of complementary colors. When I see white, I know that all the light rays are being reflected. When I see black, I know that all the light rays are being absorbed and there's absolutely no reflection. I'm seeing the absence of reflected light. When I see blue, I know that certain rays are being reflected and certain rays are being absorbed. That which gives the sensation of blue is being reflected. The rest is being absorbed. Now, depending upon the shade of blue, it'll be a reddish orange. If you take those two and bring them together, then you have the whole. If you want to have a good, balanced painting, take your primary color and somewhere in that painting, blend in its complement. If you want to gray an object, take its complementary color, add that to your color and add white, and you'll have a natural gray rather than a stark gray. God intended male and female come together in order that we might balance one another. This is the why opposites attract. We need that balancing effect, if you will. You see, every personality trait has strengths and has weaknesses. For instance, organized people make plans and they work those plans. But if anything goes wrong with their plans, they become frustrated. Spontaneous people do not make plans, and sometimes they come up ill-prepared, but they are masters at rolling with the punches and adapting and making something work somehow. Extroverts make a lot of friends. But They don't keep friends very easily because easy come, easy go. Introverts do not make friends easily, but the friendships they make are very deep and lasting. All right, what we're doing is we're coming together to balance each other like the sail and the keel of a sailboat. And somebody said, yep. Typical male chauvinist pig. He's going to probably say that the male's the sail and the female's the keel. And I simply remind you that last year, for the first time in the history of the America's Cup, a non-American vessel won the event. Do any of you recall what the secret of the Australian vessel was? The unique design of its keel. Because what you have is the sail that captures the power of the wind and propels the little ship along, but you have the keel that balances it, because without the balance of the keel, it will be toppling over and laying with its sail in the water, and you cannot go anywhere with your sail in the water. But you have that balance. And so what happens is, subconsciously, I'm looking for someone to balance me. At those places where I am at the far end of the spectrum, I want somebody on the opposite end of the spectrum so they will balance me. At those points where I'm in the midpoint, I want some at the midpoint to balance me so that we work together as a team. Getting the picture now. But here's where the problem comes in. The problem is that we become competitive. Trying to be superior, or thinking, my way, I'm the right one, I'm the boss, or my way is best. Organized people have never, ever said anything like, well, if they'd just get organized, they'd accomplish twice as much. If my wife ever organizes my desk, I'm lost. I'll never again find a paper. I will not know where it is. But if she'll leave it alone, I can find it in that hodgepodge of little papers scattered all over the desk. Somewhere there, it's in, and I can find it. But that's the thing. We get competitive. And the more we are at an extreme, the more competitive we get. I was using an illustration one time of saying we come together like hydrogen and oxygen. And they said, yeah, Pride, you know what happens when hydrogen and oxygen come together, don't you? It's an explosion. I said, I know that, but do you know that most of you got here today via an explosion? What happens inside your car engine? There's a multiple little explosions as your gasoline burns, an explosion, you get here. Now, if it's out of control, you have a problem. And we find ourselves becoming competitive. And then we start putting each other down. Little things like, why can't a woman think like a man? Ladies, you ever had somebody say like that? Hey, I'm going to be honest with you. Women can think. They can be very logical, very sequential. But they will never think exactly like a man because they're a woman. I can understand that in part because I'm from South Louisiana. When my uncle and my father got grown and moved off to get a job, they changed the pronunciation of the name because the Cajun people were looked upon as being stupid. They spoke French instead of English. My name is really Besson, but they changed it to Beeson. I later learned what had happened, and I changed it back to Besson, which is closer to its original form, but they were always putting down the Cajuns. When I began to relish and delight in my Cajun heritage, my sister said, Teddy will turn over to his grave if you say you're a Cajun. Well, that's a put down. Dad cannot accept it. I'm proud of it. There's another way that I can experience some of that. And that is when women look and say, why cannot not a man feel like a woman? Y'all with me right now? Some of you are beginning to touch. Hey, I can feel, I have feelings, but I'll never feel exactly like a woman because I'm not a woman. Are you with me? We find ourselves, instead of working together, becoming competitive. God intended for us to balance, complement, work together. And I think the more we understand about some of the basic differences, the better off we are. Now, as I began to speak about these differences, I'm not trying to pigeonhole anyone and say everybody's in this little square. I believe that every one of us is unique. We're a unique blend and combination of all the characteristics that God has given to us. But I think men and women have a point of lead, a point of reference from which they move. You see, as I come to understand this point of reference or lead, I can understand that this is a natural tendency. It's not that they're locked in, but this is a normal or natural way for them to respond to a given situation. For instance, men and women differ in the way they think. Now, to understand this, you've got to understand that the psyche personality is threefold in nature. That is, intellect, or logic, whichever term you want to use, emotional reasoning, and volition. Ideally, we should have an equal balance of intellectual reasoning and emotional reasoning. What do you mean, emotional reasoning, Brian? I understand intellectual reasoning. That is, one, two, three, four, therefore. What's this emotional reasoning? It's one, therefore. Sometimes called a woman's intuition, and the reason it frustrates men so often is 95% of the time she's right, and she doesn't have all the facts yet. He's supposed to have another 6 months to do what he's doing before she finds out. All right. Ideally, we should have an equal balance between logical reasoning or intellectual, and that's not intelligence, that's just a form of logic, and emotional reasoning, but none of us are perfectly balanced. Most of us will find ourselves being right-handed. For years, teachers were taught that's the way you're supposed to write, right? Have you ever wondered why so many left-handed people write upside down? Have you ever noticed that? Do you know why? Because they were taught to hold your paper like this, like a right-handed person. The only way you can write left-handed with your paper like that is to write upside down. Well, finally, they said it's okay to teach people to be left-handed, right? Do you know that last year there was a person who was almost fired from their position as a mail sorter with the Postal Department because they sorted mail left-handed? Supervisor came by and saw him and said, the book says you hold it in your left hand and sort it with your right hand. And so he started sorting mail right-handed, could barely pass the minimum. He was three times faster left-handed. Story made the newspapers, and because it made the newspapers, they finally said, it's okay, he can sort mail left-handed. I told that story to a seminar, and I said, but Clyde, don't you understand? If he sorts mail left-handed, it'll be upside down. I said, by whose standard? Do you know you chew more with one jaw than the other jaw? You look more with one eye than the other eye? Okay. In the way we think, men and women differ in their lead, their first move, if you will. Men lead from their intellect or logic, and to a greater or lesser degree, validate it with their emotions, emotional reasoning. Women, on the other hand, lead from their emotions, and to a greater or lesser degree, validate it with their intellect. Now, some men lead from their intellect and have almost no emotional validation. They're called cold, rigid, unfeeling, frequently become engineers and CPAs and the like. There are other men who have a great deal of emotional validation. These frequently become salesmen and the like. You have women who lead from their emotions, and some have almost no intellectual validation. They're called flighty, flaky. Now, they cry just to cry. You know, that type of person, they have other women who lead from their emotions and have a great deal of intellectual validation. They frequently become engineers and CPAs and the like, and there's nothing wrong with a woman being an engineer or a CPA if she'll do it like a woman rather than like a man. But if you're familiar with the Big Eight, as they call them in public accounting, most of the women who have become managing partners through the years are very masculine acting and looking because they thought they had to do it like a man. For a while, my Tuesdays were my female chem engineer CPA day. All the women that were coming to me, everybody was coming to me, they were just frustrated. Not their job, but the way they were doing it because they thought they had to do it like a man rather than do it like a woman. One lady, when she heard me do this unit, knew I was a classic male chauvinist pig. 2 years later, when no one else could help her, she came to me for counseling. She was desperate when she came because of the way she thought about me. She came in, and as we began to relate to in this counseling experience, I began to realize what her problem was. Her mother had had a nervous breakdown. Her mother was emotional. When this young lady was 14 years of age, she was going to play tennis with her boyfriend. Her mother said, now you got to let him win. Daughter computed, being a woman is being emotional, being weak. I do not want to be weak, therefore I will not be emotional. And so what she did was lock her emotions into jail and throw away the key. She finished high school, went on to college. Every job she had ever held was a job that had previously been held by a man. At the time that she was coming for counseling, she was selling mobile homes, which had always been sold by men like cars. as we were talking that day, and I realized what the problem was, I says, hey, does this look familiar? She reached over and grabbed it, did like that, and then began to cry. And I just let her cry. For 10 minutes, she cried. After she finished crying, I said, now listen, your emotions are a vital part of your life. Go ahead and use them. Lead from them. Go on back to your job. Sell mobile homes. Lead from your emotions. It's okay. She went back out to the lot and began to sell so many homes that after a while, the boss said, hey, it's turned the lot upside down, but I don't care. Whatever she wants to do, let her do it. In 1982, in our, quote, distressed economy, she made $75,000 clear money selling mobile homes, leading from her emotions. Are you with me so far? Men and women differ in the way they think. Men lead with their intellect and to a greater or lesser degree validate it with their emotions. Women lead with their emotions and to a greater or lesser degree validate it with their intellect. And I hope you've heard something I said. Ladies, it is perfectly all right to be emotional. In stating that, I'm going on record against one of the primary seminar leaders of our day who would almost put down any form of emotionalism by saying that our emotions ought to be controlled by our intellect. Did y'all hear what I just said? Our emotions should not be controlled by our intellect any more than our intellect should be controlled by our emotions. Our intellect and our emotions both ought to be controlled by the Lord Jesus Christ. They are equal one with another in their relationship to making a choice. Men and women differ not only in the way they think, but also the way they look at life. Men look at life with a toughness, macho-ness. I'm a man, I'm going to act. Women with a gentleness, a tenderness. Medical records will validate what I say. If a woman wakes up, got a cold, she stays home and gets well, goes to work the next day. Man wakes up, he's got a cold. Me macho man. Me go to work, give everybody else a cold. Then when he gets so sick that he's in the hospital for a week, he finally takes some time off. You get the picture. Well, see, there is the need for that toughness. Now, ladies, courage is not the absence of fear. Anytime a man says he's never been afraid in his life, run from him. He's either a fool or a liar. Courage is the ability to act in spite of one's fear. All right. Men act with this courage, this macho-ness. One night, a young boy whose mother was in our singles class came to me after church and said, Klein, I'm playing my last ball game tomorrow. Could you come see me play? I found out his father had not seen him play a single ball game, so I had an association committee meeting, but I thought he was worth more than the committee meeting, so I went. After the game, it was announced that he made the All-Star team. I coached Little League Baseball. I noticed that he had a problem with his hitting, but had not observed what the problem was. So I said, Steve, would you like for me to take you to the batting cage and work with your on your hitting? He said, would you, Clyde? So we made arrangements. One afternoon, I picked him up after school, took him out to the batting cage, and on about the fifth pitch, I knew the problem. He was so afraid of getting hit by the baseball that any time the pitch was thrown, he stepped away from the plate. So I drew an imaginary line and said, now, Steve, if you step over this line, unless the ball is 1 inch or less away from your nose, I'm going to pop you on the rear end. The next pitch was on the outside corner. He bailed out. I stopped the machine. I popped him. He began to cry. His mother's really going to cry. He's going to get hurt. I said, if you're afraid he's going to get hurt, get him out of there before he hurts somebody else. There was a lady in Bogalusa, Louisiana. Her son, his senior year in high school, stood 6'3½" and weighed 235 pounds. She refused to let him play football because she was afraid he might get hurt. That year, he broke his arm twice, once playing ping pong. On the other hand, if I have a splinter in my finger, I would much rather a female take it out than a man. Man takes a frog gigger with a blade about that long and takes half my finger with it. A lady a little bit in need of pink. It feels so much better. You know, we need that gentleness and we need the toughness and we need both. And we balance one another. We also differ in the way we speak. Men speak to reveal facts, women emotions. Do any of you remember the Dragnet series with Jack Webb? The facts, ma'am, just the facts? Listen, that is not an exaggeration. I have some friends that used to own a pizza inn in Austin, Texas. One night, two guys stole some money and ran outside, and Addis, the husband, chased them outside, and Brenda, the wife, ran outside to follow what was going on. There was two police officers across the street, and they saw them run out there. So they pulled over right past them. What happened, ma'am? He said, well, two guys stole some money from the pizza, and my husband's chasing us. Well, ma'am, what do they look like? And she gave a perfect picture of her husband. Can you imagine his feeling had they arrested him because of her description? Fortunately, they said, ma'am, are you talking about the thieves or your husband? I mean, she gets so excited, she was talking to reveal all of her feelings. One night, Kathy and I were visiting with a couple friends of ours, and Jim shared with me how that our mutual friend Judy had broken her arm. So what happened? So we were camping, and she fell off her bicycle and broke it. Loretta, his wife, said, no, that's not the way it is to describe how all went camping, where they were camped, and how that six of them had gotten on their bicycles, and they'd ridden around the lake, and they came to a particular point, and she described that part of the lake in detail, and how that as Judy was riding along, her bicycle front wheel hit a root, and it flipped over the handlebar, and she snapped her arm, and he was in so much pain, and somebody got on the bicycle, ran by and got the car, came back, and put Judy in the car, and as they were leaving to take Judy to the hospital, they left Loretta with the bicycle, please don't leave me here. All of her feelings were coming out. That's where she was, and she understood it. Men speak to reveal facts. They'll talk about the ball game. They'll talk about the job. But very infrequently will another man call a fellow male and say, just call to see how you were talking, how you're feeling, and talk for an hour. But women have been known to call another woman, just call to see how you're feeling, and an hour later, they're still talking. Y'all are with me, aren't you? Women also differ in the key drives of life. The key drive to a male is success. The key drive to a female is security. If a man is not careful, he can very quickly marry his job. I had a lady tell me one day, she says, Clyde, if my husband were in love with another woman, I could get a sexy negligee and a new perfume, but how in the world do you stink like a petrochemical plant? Or how do you look like a law brief? You know, it's so frustrating. Man keeps all these big dreams of success, and he says to his wife, honey, when I made our first million, I'm going to build us a big old home up on the north side of Oklahoma City, up on one of those little hills over there. We're going to have a big old swimming pool, and we're going to have the water, and I'm going to make sure we have a big old oak tree in the backyard. And she looks and says, can I have a potted geranium in the meantime? A woman would much rather own a two-bedroom bungalow than lease the fanciest five-bedroom condo in the world, because owning is something she has. It's security. Wait a minute, Clyde. I know of a lot of women who are climbing the organizational rat race as fast as anybody else. I says, yeah, but why? How many times have you heard them make a statement like this? I will never again allow myself to become financially dependent upon a male. What is that, success or security? Security. And some of you know what I'm talking about because you've been there. You made that very statement, haven't you? The key drive of the woman is security. The key drive of the male is success. And then they differ in the way they see love. To a man who is primarily physical, love is primarily sexual. To a woman, it is primarily emotional. Charlie Shedd, in his book, The Sark Is Dead, he said, in a good relationship, a man can teach a woman how to love with her body, and a woman can teach a man how to love with his soul. The difference between how they view love itself. Now, the failure to understand and utilize these differences creates frustrations. Men frustrate women by their refusal or inability to listen or communicate. I'm going to tell you something that you already know, but I'm just going to validate it for you, ladies. There's not a man here who cannot say uh-huh and uh-uh at just the right moment and not hear a word you said. You've been talking to them, you knew they had tuned you out, so you just kept talking more, thinking, blessed are they that talk a lot, for they shall be heard for their much talking. But he never heard, and you said, well, he's not listening. So I'll get a new dress. Can I get a new dress? Uh-uh. You know this thing. He's still not heard what you're saying. Ladies, that's the truth. Men, we've got a problem. We do not listen nor communicate as we should. Now, ladies, it's a male problem, but there are three things you can do to help us. This is not your problem. It's our problem, but we need help. Are you with me? First of all, you can help us by remembering the principle of Reader's Digest. Condensed version. A man comes over work. Wife said, how'd you go? Okay, what'd you do? Work. Then he turns to her and says, well, how was your day? And she takes 15 minutes to describe the fight between Junior and the boy next door that lasted the totality of one blow. Where she was when she heard Junior scream, how she ran out there, how the other boy's mother came out there, what the other boy's mother was wearing, whether her hair was neatly combed or whether it was in curlers, whether she had on beboppers or tennis shoes or slippers or, you know, every detail. And finally she gets around to the important part, and he took one swing and missed, and that was all there was to it. Ladies, if you could make it 7.5 minutes, he would not be as prone to turning you off, to turn off the hearing aid. Now, I'm acknowledging it's a male problem, but we need help. You understand what I'm saying? Not blaming you, ladies. I'm just saying we need help. Another thing you could do is, and I'm going to tell you something you already know, the most vulnerable part about the male is his ego. Man comes in from work. How'd it go today? Rough. What's the matter? Well, I've been working on this problem for 3 days and haven't solved it. Now, this man stands 6'2", but at that moment his ego is an inch to an inch and a half max. She said, well, what's the problem? He tells her. Well, the answer is so-and-so. What does that do to his ego? Destroys him. You know, doctors are wise. They know that a person has cancer, you got to remove the cancer for them to live. But sometimes you got to build them up before you operate. Ladies, if you'd make him feel like he was the greatest, and if anybody could solve it, he couldn't get him all built up, then he could go in feeling good. You could give him the answer, and he'd think, man, he's the smartest man in the world, and you're the smartest woman that ever lived. But if you destroy his ego, what good is it? And then, women by nature are more moralistic than men. You doubt that? Go to church tomorrow. You'll find more women there than men. Man comes in from work. I said, how'd it go? Well, it's been a very difficult day. What's the matter? Well, there was a lady at the office that apparently is doubting her femininity, and she wore a see-through blouse and a micro mini skirt, and she hustled me all day long, and it's really been hard for me to keep my thoughts where I should and not to think anything I should not think. Oh, you've had such a difficult day. Come on in, have a seat. Can I get you a cup of coffee? Can I get you a Coke? Is that the way you respond? You what? How dare you? I never think any like thing like that. So what does he do? He just shuts up. Okay. He never talks to me. He's afraid he might get a sir. Now, ladies, I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying we've got a problem. You see what I'm talking about? And we need a little help. If you could help us, it may encourage us to be a little more capable of communicating. Women, on the other hand, frustrate men by their tendency to dominate. Now, dominating is not whipping a person. It's nothing more than an inner urge to control, to be like a mother. Now, ladies, I understand there are two reasons for it. One is you're around children all day long. You come in, the man comes in, and he starts acting like a little boy, and you just talk to him like a little boy. It's very convenient, isn't it? If he acts like a little boy, it's easy to treat him like a little boy. When I was doing doctoral work, my wife at the time was teaching second grade. I'd spend my day at the seminary discoursing on the learned things of theology. And I'd go home, and she'd start talking to me as if I were a second grader. It wasn't she was putting me down. That was the language she was talking. It was just natural to stay in that language. That's one reason they do it, men. There's a second reason. As I said last evening, women look out over the male population and feel like there's been such a crop failure that they feel like that God has given them the task of being the redeemer of men, and they see that chunk of coal, and they start working with him, helping him to shape him and form him and polish him and to make him into the most beautiful diamond the world's ever seen. Look what I've done for my man. Ladies, just remember, though, it's frustrating him. And when he starts saying, yes, mother, that's a red lantern. Just remember that. On the other hand, men frustrate women by their preoccupation with interest outside the home. They can talk for hours about the golf game, the fishing trip, the baseball game, the Cowboys, the College World Series. But then when the wife turns and talks about the home, she turns and says, honey, would you mind going shopping with me for some furniture? Honey, you know how I hate to shop. I hate all those crowds and all those salesmen. Why don't you get Judy to go with you? But don't spend too much money. Hey, Clyde, it's even too much to ask him to go shopping. I just like for him to give me an interest of what he would like. Honey, what color should we paint the living room? I don't care. Well, he's not interested in the living room. He's interested in the bedroom. Honey, what color should we paint the bedroom? I don't care. Well, he's not interested in the bedroom, but he's interested in the bed. Honey, what kind of sheet should we have on the bed? Should we have pastels? Should we have floral prints? Should we have jungle prints? Plain? She's a... I don't care. Men, listen to me. One of the ways that women express their creative drive is in their decorating of the home. And for you never to get involved in that part of her life is like being married to an artist and never commenting on a painting or a piece of sculpture. Men frustrate women by their failure to be interested in the things of the home. On the other hand, women frustrate men by their tendency to become emotional in an argument. Ladies, I understand. It's okay. You know, there are two reasons for it. Quite simple. First, an argument is a time of stress. When I pastored in South Louisiana, a lot of the elderly people learned French before they learned English. And when I went by to visit with them, they'd speak English to me except in a time of stress like a death. And then invariably, they'd start talking French. They were not putting me down. It was just the fact that under time of stress, they did that. And ladies, you'll become emotional armaments. You may be very logical for a while, and you may turn emotional because of the stress factor. Secondly, an argument is a fight. I am right-handed. I lead with my left and cold cock a person with my right. Suppose I'm fighting a guy who's left-handed. He leads with his right. I said, wait a minute, you can't do that. You've got to do it the way I do. He looked at me and said, listen, friend, if I can beat you fighting right-handed, I will. But the object of the game is to win, so if I can win fighting left-handed, I'm going to do that. For me to ask a woman to argue logically is just like me asking a left-handed to say, you've got to fight right-handed. She has just as much right to fight emotionally as I have to fight intellectually or logically. But ladies, just understand, it frustrates me. My dad taught me how to fight with my fist, and I'm fairly good at it. Through the years, I've learned how to fight with words and can be vicious, but no one ever taught me how to fight with tears. When you start crying, I don't know what to do. I don't know whether to get on my knees and say, please, just don't cry. I'll do anything if you just stop crying, please. Or just roll out. Oh, there, now you have something to cry about. I'm frustrated. That's all I'm saying. Totally frustrated about it. On the other hand, men frustrate women by failing to see that the little things are often the big things to her. Men, birthdays, Valentine's Day, anniversaries, Mother's Day. Don't ever say, well, you're not my mother. There's always at least a dollar for a card. I don't care how poor you are. And secondly, men, do not get your secretaries or a female friend to buy the gift for your wife or lady friend. But Clyde, I don't know what they want. That's the reason God gave you 2 ears. Listen, but don't make them repeat it, because if they have to repeat it, they'll think you didn't hear them the first time. I was counseling with a young couple. He was in dental school. She was a teacher. And she was very upset because he never listened to her and always got somebody else to buy the gift. And she said, well, I don't know what you want. I said, she'll tell you. The next week they came in for the appointment. After a while they started laughing. I said, what happened? You know how just before major holidays like Mother's Day and all those things, you get those flyers from the jewelry stores and the discount stores? Well, they'd gotten one of those flyers, and she'd circled 3 items in 3 different price ranges and placed that flyer on his dresser. He got up to get his underwear, and there sat that flyer. No question, he knew what she wanted. On the other hand, women frustrate men when they refuse to abandon their girlhood dream. I believe that every young girl has a dream of being swept off of her feet by a knight on a white charger, only to awaken one day and realize that she was picked up by a kicker in a pickup truck. Ladies, I'm sorry your dream boat got away and you got stuck with a rowboat, but remember, you can row your boat gently down the stream. You may not get there in as much class, but you'll get there. But every time you keep talking about this dream boat, I feel so inadequate, because as I listen to the women today, I feel that that dream boat is the combination between Tom Selleck, Burt Reynolds, Clint Eastwood, and Jesus Christ all rolled into one. And I don't measure up to any one of them, much less all 4 of them combined. I feel such a failure, so inadequate. On the other hand, men frustrate women by their incapacity to understand the somewhat more volatile mood swings of a woman. Woman could be up here at the peak, boy, I'm going to have some fun.
pit of despair. Better go down and help her. Looks like a bouncing ball as she bounces up and down. He cries out as she goes by. Hey, can you throw me a kiss in the night as you go by? Or better still, can you level off enough to make it a local call rather than a long-distance call? Men don't expect women to beeline it. I was told years ago by a person in the medical profession that whereas the body chemistry of a male changes 4 times a month, the body chemistry of a female changes 17 times a month. It has to do with the menstrual cycle. And we're becoming more aware of the premenstrual cycle and how it affects women. But I hope we'll not go to the opposite ditch, ladies. I heard recently of a lady who was trying to plead her case for murder because of temporary insanity because of PMS. No, let's not go that far. But we've got to understand they are going to be that way. And I've come to understand something about my wife. If she's upset and I go in there and help her, 3 days she'll get over the problem. If I just let her know I'm available and love her and stay out of her way, she gets over it in 30 minutes. That hurts me because I'm a rescuer. You know, I'm a counselor. I want to go in and help everybody. But we've got to just recognize these mood swings and give them freedom to do so. On the other hand, women frustrate men by their tendency to attack often on issues that men feel are so insignificant. They cannot understand why she gets so upset just because his entrance into the home can be followed by the discard of dirty clothes from the front door back to the bathroom. Clyde, I'm not that crude. We've got a dirty clothes hamper. My clothes are always close by. I remind you, clothes count in horseshoes and hand grenades and washers. Men, it's not the issue, it's the attitude. The attitude that basically says, okay, slave, take care of me. Pick up behind me. You don't have anything else. Do you just sit on and watch soap operas all day? Do something. Earn your keep. Ladies, if you have young boys at home and you're always going around picking up behind them, you're going to have a lady 5, 10, 15 years from now that's going to resent you rather deeply. You get the message? Now, I believe that God intends for us to learn these patterns by seeing a good, healthy role from our parents as they are understanding the principle of mutual submission. In chapter 5 of Ephesians, 21 always precedes 22. 5:21 says, submitting yourselves one to another. There's a two-way submission. Now, let's go with that thought in mind back to the primary drive of the male and the primary drive of the female. The primary drive of the female is what? Security. It says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. If the man comes to the place that he loves his wife as Christ loved the church, his one desire will be in everything he does to meet her needs. If he is doing that and she senses that kind of love, how is she going to feel? Very secure. And so her basic need is being met. On the other hand, it says, wives, see that you reverence your husband. The word reverence means to worship. Now, ladies, that does not mean offer 3 burnt offerings and sacrifices a day. Okay? What it means is you come to that place that you give him the ultimate stroke. What is the ultimate stroke? His primary drive is success. What is the ultimate compliment you can pay a male? To say to him, sir, I so believe in your leadership. Now, not dictatorship. Dictatorship comes out of a low self-esteem, looks down upon the dictated, resents any input from them, makes decisions and blames others if it goes wrong. Leadership comes out of a healthy self-love, looks upon the led as an equal. Did you catch that? As an equal, not underneath them, but always as an equal. Delights in their input, treasures it, values it, then makes a decision. If it goes wrong, assumes responsibility to themselves, does not blame another person. All right, you got the picture now. She says, I so believe in you and your leadership and your love for me that I know that you're so under God's leadership that I can share a thought with you and you'll treasure it, you'll evaluate it, but then you'll make a decision always with that which is best for us in mind. Therefore, I can share my thoughts with you, and whatever decision you make, I can go with you because I know that you're doing that which is best. And even if you make a mistake, you're trying. So I will pay you the greatest compliment possible. by submitting to your leadership, not dictatorship, leadership. But what happens when the patterns are defective? Say the father is domineering and the mother's very passive. The children will do one of two things. They'll either copy and be exactly like their parents, with the man thinking, boy, I can hardly wait till I get married so I can boss my wife and kids around like my daddy bossed us around. The woman says, I want to be just like mommy was, very passive, and I'll get a man that tells me what to do and I'll be comfortable. Or they can swing like a pendulum to the opposite side, the opposite extreme, and get to the place that they will overreact, and the man will become very passive, and the woman will become very domineering, and I'm going to tell you what to do, and no man's going to boss me around like that, and they're on their way to becoming a survivor. What if mom's domineering and dad's passive? Same two patterns. Either they can copy and be just like their parents, or they can go the opposite extreme, because I find unless there's counseling or a seminar where a person has an encounter and faces themselves, they do not automatically stop in the middle of the road. They go from one ditch to the other, swinging like a pendulum, unless there's some intervening force to stop them at the midpoint. There's one other area that I feel a very real concern to share with you. That is about survivors. We've almost come to the place that we have glorified survivors. There was a song sung recently by a lady that said, I will survive, and I hear you. And I believe that surviving is better than dying. It's better than being run over, wiped out. But listen to me. It's not as good as living, because basically it is a negative attitude. It is a defensive attitude instead of an offensive attitude. It is a closed attitude rather than a positive attitude. And I believe that if you and I are ever going to learn to really live, we're going to have to overcome the survivor role. Now, to understand what happens and how the survivor role develops, you've got to understand the stages of development in relationships. All of us come into the world totally dependent, like a little child. I'm dependent upon mommy and daddy to take care of me, and I start growing, and then I come to that stage that I call independent dependence. I want to be independent, but I'm not ready to assume responsibility that goes with being independent. So what I do is I react rather than act, and then I blame others. If it's good, ha ha ha, I made the right decision. If it's wrong, you made me do it. Typical teenagers always blaming their parents for their mistakes. Are y'all with me right now? Have any of you ever encountered any 30 and 40-year-old teenagers? Someone just tied into somebody. You know somebody like that? They're independent, dependent. They're still dependent, but they want to act like they're independent. Then we move to the stage called independence. When I become independent, I can make a decision and accept responsibility for it. If it's good, thank you. If it's wrong, I'm sorry. But I'm responsible for my decisions, but God never intended for me to be independent. God intended for me to be interdependent. Interdependence means I have the capacity and ability to stand alone. But I know, as I look at you, that you are strong where I'm deficient. And I'm strong where you're deficient, so we'll create a partnership. It's like a man who could sell ice to an Eskimo in Alaska in January, but could never create a product to sell, creating a partnership with a man who could not sell water to a multi-millionaire who is dying of thirst in the middle of the Sahara Desert with $1,000 in his pocket, and he was selling it for a penny a gallon, but could create 1,001 products to sell. Together they come together, and they create a partnership that makes both of them millionaires. God wants us to be interdependent. What happens with survivors is one of two things. Either they develop a survivor tendency from childhood when they see, say, a lady is in a situation where dad is very domineering towards her mother, and so she goes to the opposite side and becomes very independent. No man's going to walk on me. I'm going to make sure. And they get so far to the other side that they've gone from one ditch where her mother is to the opposite ditch. Or, as I so often see it, a lady marries a man. She's very passive and very dependent. He dies or leaves her. She's suddenly cast out into the ocean, begins to flail her arms, and she's desperately crying, I will survive. And she begins to survive. But what happens? She moves from the passive bitch over too far to the independent side and becomes too independent. Now, that type of woman attracts weak men who want a mother figure, who want somebody to burp them, if you will. They, on the other hand, have a tendency to attract macho men, not necessarily physically macho, but businessmen. They're already sales manager for the district. They're going to become vice president of sales by the time they're 45 and president of the company by the time they're 50, or at least have their own company. And these men are overachievers who frequently are men with a low self-esteem who are trying to overcompensate for it. They're thin veneers covering a lot of bull, and once you get inside, you find out they stink. And the good old guys look and say, well, she doesn't need me, and ride on by. The problem with the survivor is that surviving is a lack of trust. And the only way you ever overcome it is to swing back to the middle. Not back to being dependent and passive, that's not where it is, but back into the middle of being interdependent. Learning to trust. Make yourself vulnerable. Let others do something for you. We have a friend. We met our friend and decided the next time we were in the area doing a seminar, since we had a male friend there, we'd like for them to meet just to see if they had anything in common. So we invited the two people to go eat with us. Our lady friend was sharing with us her story. She had married her high school sweetheart. And through the years, he had gone into religious work. But she had been the primary source of financial support because of the unsteadiness at times of his job. She gave birth to a child. When the child was about 3 or 4 months old, she was involved in a car wreck. Her back was broken, she was in a full body cast, and her face was fractured in 55 places. A couple of weeks later, her husband, who because of some problems in his own life as a child, could not handle the pressure, the problems of what was going on, walked in and said, I'm sorry, I can't have it. Bye. And left. She was in a body cast for some time. They said she'd be a vegetable, but she overcame it. And through the years, she had provided for she and her son, never receiving child support because, as she said, he probably had nothing because for so long he was probably washing dishes, trying to bring to fulfillment that dream that he had of someday being a star on Broadway. I said, I understand what you're saying. We finished eating, paid for the check. We were at a Mexican restaurant there in that city, 12-foot doors, big 300-pound doors, and she was the first one to the door, and you guessed it, boom, right through the door she went. After that had happened, I began to think, you know, what I'm seeing is the survivor does for themselves things that they could let someone else do because it's too risky. And so the next time I was in the area and doing the seminar, she heard me share the story and how that all I'm asking is, let someone else do something for you. Ladies, allow the man to open the door for you or something like that just to say, hey, I'm willing to let myself be vulnerable. She picked up on it. The next time I was in that area to do another seminar, she came rushing in the church, clack, clack. I gotta tell you what happened. I said, what happened? She says, I drove up to the church and was getting out of my car and slamming the door. I realized my keys were locked in the car. Now, I had one hid under the hood, but I couldn't remember how to get the hood open to get to the key. Now, the old person would have just stayed there, no matter if it took them 5 hours to finally get under the hood and get the key. But I saw a guy going into the church, and I said, sir, are you going in for that single seminar? He said, yes, I am. Sir, would you mind helping me? I've locked my keys in the car. I've got one under the hood, but I can't figure out how to get the hood open. He came over and helped her. She came in. Got to let someone do something for me. She called me at Christmas, and she said, Clyde, I'm still working on it. Still have a problem, but I've made some progress. And I keep saying, let someone else do something for you. Allow yourself to become vulnerable. That's what it means. Move back to the place where you allow someone else to do something for you. Hey, I could do most everything too, but I found this. If I'll let others help me, I'm a lot stronger. But I know when I let someone else do something for me, it makes me vulnerable, doesn't it? Ladies, do y'all understand? Men, I find that men can become survivors when they have been verbally abused in a marriage or when they have been financially cleaned out in a divorce. They have trouble trusting too, and I say, wait. The key of everything we're talking about is learning to cooperate, to complement. For God did not intend for us to be competitive, but complementary. And when we work together, we both gain. We both grow richer.